Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 1st, 2015. A New Year's message of hope today from a South Sudanese bishop.
My hope is that the people achieve, that the people have reached the rock bottom. But I don't think we can go any further deeper than this. It's a day of reckoning. I think we can only rise. I don't think people can go down any deeper, yes.
And residents of Western Equatoria State spend New Year's Day mourning the loss of loved ones killed in recent cattle raids.
In a place called Ikulundu, where a cattle camp was attacked, 6 people were killed. And they are deep into the forest, and they made life of people very, very difficult to go and hunt, collect the honey. And there have also been a lot of disappearances. Even recently, a son of my uncle disappeared.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The sound of gunfire erupting at the stroke of midnight in Juba. The gunfire terrified many residents who were not sure if it was celebratory gunfire in violation of SPLA instructions or if soldiers were shooting at civilians. SPLA spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre condemned last night's shooting, calling it illegal. He tells the online news outlet Talk of South Sudan that those firing bullets into the air last night must have been drunken soldiers. Aguirre says no one was harmed during the celebratory gunfire. As New Year unfolds, a South Sudanese religious leader say citizens need to focus on their personal commitment to peace in South Sudan. Bishop Rudolf Deng of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Wau says he is saddened by the ongoing conflict and is urging the two parties to end the fighting and prevent any more families from losing their loved ones. VOA fellow Michael Atit has more from Washington.
Bishop Deng says people need to learn how to live together if South Sudan is to avoid another year like this one.
I see people in 2014, everybody trying to see a new beginning, turning a new page in relationships, in personal commitment to peace, to reconciliation, yes. People at last have begun to digest the value of peace, the need for peace, the need to forgive, the need to reconcile, and to move on with life. Life goes on.
Deng says the slow-moving peace talks in Addis Ababa should not only concentrate those in power, but also in ordinary South Sudanese. The negotiators and mediators have to start focusing on the needs of the people in South Sudan, Deng says.
It's not just a question of power, but it's a question of integrity, it's a question of law and order, it's a question of justice, accountability. These are the issues that they need to debate. Yes, when they are discussing and they are debating in Addis Ababa.
He says the church is doing what it can to support peace initiative, but it is up to the government and the armed opposition to reach the lasting peace deal. Talks to end the year-old conflict in South Sudan were put in indefinite hold 2 weeks ago. Bishop Deng is hopeful that in 2015, the warring parties will reach a deal that will stop more blood being shed in the country. He says South Sudanese have suffered enough and urgently need peace.
My hope is that the people achieve, that the people have reached the rock bottom. But I don't think we can go any further deeper than this. It's a day of reckoning. I think we can only rise. I don't think people can go down any deeper, yes.
Bishop Deng is a member of the National Healing and Reconciliation Committee, which was formed by President Salva Kiir in April last year. Then Vice President Riek Machar led the committee before he was fired in July 2013. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
Farmers in Western Equatoria State are still mourning their loved ones killed by suspected cattle raiders from Lake State. Last week, 6 people were killed in Kulundu village in Mundri County. 3 others were killed in Mudubai in Maridi County in a separate cattle raid. A National Assembly lawmaker representing Mundri County blames certain unnamed individuals within government institutions for arming cattle owners. Joseph Ngale says there must be a coordinated effort to curb cattle raids and avoid possible revenge attacks from farmers in Western Equatoria State. Ngale says farmers and cattle keepers have been battling each other for decades.
Cattle came from a tour of Europe, and cattle came from IDPs from Bor, the Aliab cattle camps, and then the Mumbari cattle camps, concentrated in this small area in Mundri West, particularly Bangalo Payam and Karika Payam. First of all, the environment is devastated. The crops are being destroyed. Just the usual stories. But of recently, there has been a lot of intra and inter cattle raids. Cattle camps from Bor, raiding cattle from Mundari, and they are also raiding the cattle of the local population. And then in the process, they started killing the locals. And the locals retaliated, particularly in a place called Kulundu, where a cattle camp was attacked. 6 people were killed. And they are deep into the forest, and they made life of people very, very difficult to go and hunt, collect the honey. And there have also been a lot of disappearances, even recently. The son of my uncle disappeared, two of them. We just got the bones 3 days ago. Yesterday I was in the burial place burying the remains. And many other people whom the locals have not discovered.
And is this also related to the attack at Mudubai in Maridi County last week?
Definitely, yes. You know, they started clashing here with the locals. Some of the cattle camps headed towards Barawolo. From there, they divided into two. Most of the cattle camps from Bor went southwards to Rasolo, and they headed towards Tore and Yei. Now some few went to Barawolo. From there, they went to Meridi side. That is where they went and attacked the cattle camp in Meridi, in Mudubai.
What are the state authorities doing? I know you are representing Mundri County in the National Assembly, but what are the state authorities in Western Equatoria doing to address this problem?
Frankly speaking, the state authorities have been trying their level best. The governor has been coming, especially to Mundri West, more than 4 times, talking and giving deadlines for the cattle camps to move. At some stages, security forces, especially SCLA, were involved taking these people back to Europe, and again they come back several times. Especially the cattle camp, which was attacked in Kulundu, was taken back for more than 5 times, but usually when they reach there, they come back. So the issue is not really like only, you know, involving the army. And I think we need to involve more people than that. But I can give credit to the state authorities because they have been trying their level best, including the other state authorities, like state and the counties here. But this state plan seems to be out of the hand of the authorities, actually. They are armed, they are marauding around, they are going anywhere.
Hearing that cattle owners are armed brings a question: who arms them? Where do they get their weapons from?
There is no way arms can come. It is from our institutions of government, definitely. You know, the armory is with the army, is with the police, is with the other institutions. So definitely, civilians don't go out to purchase armament. It is the government which bring armament. And it is the same government elements of in the government which take arms from the armory to the civilians. Although some few civilians may find their way to buy arms from other areas, but most the bulk of the armament is coming from our own institutions of security.
That's Joseph Ngere, a member of parliament representing Mundri County in the National Assembly. He was speaking to me from Mundri earlier today. The year-long conflict in South Sudan has taken a heavy toll on the population through malnutrition, death, and displacement. But the UN Food and Agriculture Organization says millions of cattle have been also displaced, raising concerns over disease outbreaks and tensions between pastoralist groups. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Dr. Su Laozi says the FAO is quite concerned, not only about the livestock, but the millions of people who rely on the animals for their livelihoods. Lao Tse is the UN agency's representative to South Sudan. From Juba, she spoke to VOA about the crisis just over a year since the conflict began.
When people ran, they also ran with their cattle, and they did everything they could to try and find a place to survive a tremendous amount of violence. And the running has gone on all year, both for the people and for the cattle.
As a result of the conflict, she says, the normal patterns of cattle migration were disrupted.
When the rains end, the pastoralists will move their cattle and their goats and their sheep towards the water sources where there's good grass and water to be had. And then when the rains come back, they can disperse across a wide part of this country to, again, be in pursuit of good pastures. So what we have now, though, is people just going anywhere with their livestock, including into areas where there are people farming. And so we have conflicts between the livestock owners and the farmers who don't want the cows to come in and eat the sorghum, which is understandable.
She says the situation could destabilize some communities that have so far been able to refrain from violence. However, she says, in some parts of Sudan, cattle-related violence has reached unprecedented levels. One such area is Lakes State.
The kind of violence that we're seeing there normally would be contained by the security forces if this was a normal year, because there are a lot of tensions. There's a lot of competition for resources between groups as they move towards pastures, towards water, towards even areas where they need to do salt licks for the livestock. Many times it's the governors of the states that are holding peace conferences. But because so much of the political and security apparatus is engaged in a different problem, the problem of the ongoing fight, that we see these types of fights erupt without any control on them.
Following the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005, herders were able to move their cattle to places they had not been before. That migration introduced livestock diseases, such as East Coast fever, to new areas. It's a tick-borne disease that can quickly kill young cattle.
We're now seeing, as a result of this crisis, unprecedented expansion of diseases like East Coast fever. In addition, we're seeing some of the diseases that come when livestock can't move normally, particularly when they get stuck in waterlogged areas. We begin to see issues of rot, foot rot. We begin to see issues of liver flukes that the livestock owners would normally know how to avoid if they could move properly. So the livestock teams for FAO, our partners, the Red Cross, government, have been super busy, and I don't think we're actually able to keep pace just yet.
The cattle displacement and the disease risk it poses also is a threat to South Sudan's food security.
Here in South Sudan, the livestock generally are not slaughtered for meat unless it's for maybe a big wedding or in case of really dire emergencies, which unfortunately we have right now. Most of the time, it's the milk products from the livestock. When the cattle herds are not near families because they're having to move away, when the livestock are sick and they're not producing as much milk, then we start to see a real impact on the nutritional status of pregnant and lactating women, of young children, of youth, you know, boys and girls of school age.
The ability to farm in South Sudan has also been restricted or curtailed in areas of conflict. The FAO representative says there is a solution to the problems.
South Sudan needs peace. There is no greater contribution to the health and welfare, the prevention of a deteriorating food security crisis. There's nothing more important than peace.
Nevertheless, Lao Tse says the FAO and its partners are preparing to expand operations. She says the agency is asking for about $90 million. She says the donors have been generous. And in 2014, FAO programs reached nearly 3 million people. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As Sudan celebrates 59 years of independence, critics lash at the Bashir's regime crackdown on the press and the opposition candidates. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what structures can be put in place to punish men who sexually assault women to reduce this threat in society.
The women should be empowered not to be afraid of first reporting the men, and the state institutions should also have measures that will not create more problems for the women if they report to them.
I believe that government should send everyone who sexually assaults somebody in the society to jail and never release them.
There should be ease of reporting on the part of women. The women should be relaxed when they're reporting the crime, and then the punishment should be a bit prompt.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The conflict in South Sudan has brought a sharp rise in the number of children who have been orphaned, raped, maimed, or suffer other human rights violations, the UN says in a report released this week. The report by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says all parties to the year-old conflict in South Sudan have committed serious rights violations against children. Although the report does not paint a rosy picture of life in South Sudan before the current conflict began, it says things got much worse for children after the violence erupted in Juba on December 15, 2013. Children have been directly targeted in the conflict, the report says. Hundreds of children have been killed and thousands have been forced to fight as child soldiers for both sides in the conflict. Girls and boys have been abducted, raped, and suffered other forms of sexual violence, the report says. Education have been disrupted as schools have been attacked or occupied by fighters from both sides of the conflict. The UN says around 400,000 children have dropped out of school since the conflict began. The ethnic dimension of South Sudan's conflict has also had devastating effects on children, the UN says. Girls and boys have been killed, maimed, raped, orphaned, or made homeless by ethnic violence, it says. The report is the first by the UN Secretary General on children in conflict in South Sudan since the country became independent in July 2011. The Secretary General calls on the government of South Sudan to launch a program to help reintegrate former child soldiers to civilian life and to take steps to ensure those who commit violence against children are brought to justice. A Sudanese opposition leader is lashing out at President Omar al-Bashir's regime for the lack of political and press freedom as Sudan celebrates its 59th independence anniversary today. Hassan Osman Rizik, deputy president of the opposition party Reform Now movement, says he is disappointed the president did not release political detainees as a positive gesture towards national reconciliation. Yesterday, Mr. Bashir announced presidential and parliamentary elections slotted for April 2015 will go ahead as planned. Rizik tells VOA's James Batty his party will not take part in the elections.
As the Sudanese, we always glad to celebrate the Independence Day. But independent is not just waving a flag, or is not the withdrawal of the colonial, what you call army or something like that, from Sudan. Yani. We just exchange foreigners by another rule, which is not acceptable by Sudanese people. There is no democracy, there is no freedom. There are many political detainees in Sudan, in the prisons. We want the release of all of them. We signed a roadmap with the government about what we call the national dialogue. But the government signed this paper, but they didn't apply or they didn't do anything for that. Now we have many Sudanese in prison, political detainees. There is confiscation for newspapers, and there is no freedom in Sudan. Even the speech delivered by the president, there is nothing in it.
I talked with the Minister of Information, Ahmed Bilal, and he said that President Bashir is open to release political prisoners when it is recommended to him.
We recommended for him many times to release the political detainees. And we said that if you release the political detainees, that will help us to bring the armed force from outside to join the national dialogue. But he didn't do that. If he released one, he captured five or three. Now there are about more than 60 political detainees in the prisons of Sudan.
The president said that the elections next year will go ahead in the interest of stability. What's your comment?
It is impossible for any political party to run for the elections because everything was overwhelmed by the ruling party. They are ruling all the security forces and the armed forces and the money, and it is very difficult to run for the elections with the political. There is no way to compete with them.
Now, you are involved in the national dialogue, is that correct?
We are involved in the national dialogue, but we said first, before elections, let us have a new government, and a government which was all the parties and all Sudanese have confidence that this is a good government, and there is no fear that these elections will be fair. We can't have a fair election with this government ruling and doing the elections in Sudan.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year.
Okay. Oh, happy New Year. Happy New Year. Thank
That's
you.
Sudanese opposition party leader Hassan Osman Rizik speaking to VOA's James Batty from Khartoum. One of the longest-standing rebel groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo is facing a Friday deadline to disarm or face military action from UN peacekeepers and Congolese armed forces. VOA's Gabe Joslo reports some members of the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR, have reportedly surrendered, but the international community says it's not enough.
In July, regional heads of state gave the FDLR 6 months to fully disarm or face military action. That deadline comes on Friday, January 2nd. The group, which was formed by Hutu fighters responsible for the 1994 Rwandan genocide, has been accused of committing atrocities in the eastern Congo. The Congolese military and the United Nations peacekeeping force, MONUSCO, have promised to take action against the FDLR if the rebels fail to lay down their weapons. In a call with reporters Tuesday, U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region, Russell Feingold, said the United States also supports the use of military force against the group.
As the group has clearly demonstrated over the past 6 months, that a purely voluntary surrender process will not work to end the threat from this illegitimate armed group. Instead, military action must be undertaken to pressure the FDLR to lay down its arms.
Last Sunday, about 150 FDLR soldiers reportedly surrendered to Congolese authorities in North Kivu province. Feingold says the latest estimates suggest there are still about 1,400 fighters at large. Rwanda, which considers the FDLR one of its greatest threats, disapproved of the decision to give the group more time to disarm. Rwandan officials have called into question whether the Congolese army and UN forces are really ready to eliminate the rebels. Special Envoy Feingold dismissed these doubts.
I have received repeated assurances from the key stakeholder countries that they are committed to ending the threat of the FDLR and are prepared to follow up that commitment with action.
In 2013, the same collaboration of UN and Congolese forces successfully defeated the M23 rebel group, which had seized control of territory in eastern Congo. UN experts and rights groups have accused Rwanda of supporting the M23 in part to shore up its defenses against the FDLR. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Turning to Cairo now, an Egyptian appeals court has overturned an initial verdict that sentenced three Al Jazeera English journalists to 7 to 10 years in prison, paving the way for retrial. But family members and supporters expressed disappointment the journalists were not released immediately, pending retrial. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The appellate court decision to throw out the verdict in the case of three Al Jazeera TV journalists drew applause and criticism after the judicial panel ruled the men must be retried. But the presiding judge said he did not have the authority to release the men on bail. Reporters were not allowed to attend the court session, and the ruling was handed down quickly. Family members of the three journalists, as well as their attorneys, expressed anger that the men were not acquitted or released on bail. Marwa Omara, the fiancée of Al Jazeera producer Mohamed Fahmy, was saddened by the verdict and told journalists she hoped Egyptian authorities would use their power to find a quick resolution to the journalist detention.
I can't even imagine that he will stay for a year in prison. His lawyer, Amal Clooney, just applied to the Egyptian presidency and the Egyptian prosecutor for Mohamed to be deported to Canada and be treated as a Canadian citizen and to continue the trial there.
Egyptian authorities accused the men of operating illegally without press credentials. The government closed Jazeera TV's offices in August 2013, accusing it of supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. The group had been holding street demonstrations, some of which turned violent, to protest the ouster of former President Mohamed Morsi that July. Al Jazeera's acting general manager, Mustafa Suwag, applauded the appeals court decision, but said the journalists should be released. He says that he welcomes the decision by the appellate court to accept the appeal presented by the imprisoned Jazeera journalists, but would also have liked that they be released since they are being held unjustly. The decision against them, he says, as well as their arrest and trial, were politically motivated, and their presence in an Egyptian jail remains political. Veteran Egyptian editor and publisher Hisham Qasim tells VOA that despite the background of a regional spat between Egypt and Qatar over the latter's support for the Muslim Brotherhood group, he thinks the condemnation of the journalists was unfair.
The initial verdict is a sham. It's full of procedural mistakes, and the Cassation Court has been known to shoot down rulings like these. So regardless of what is going on between Egypt and Qatar right now, we were going to get the same ruling today. However, as there's been a mistrial, I don't see why they should remain under arrest pending trial. And this is probably where the prosecutor general can interfere and have them released until the new date for trial.
There has been some speculation in the Egyptian media that President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi might pardon the three men, but Qasim believes that unlikely, if only for procedural reasons, until a final verdict in a retrial is reached. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the classic song Bonane by Lokwasa ya Mbongo and Sam Mangwana.
Allah merci, encore merci beaucoup. Tout puissant merci, tu m'as donné beaucoup la chance. Bonne année, 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 bonne année,
bonne année, bonne année,
bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année. Poisson, bébé, on dit pas, on va rouler jusqu'au matin. Bonne année, oh, yeah. Bonne année, oh, bonne année, bonne année, bonne année, oh. Bonne année, bonne année, oh. Bonne année, 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 bonne année. Bonne année, bonne année.
Bonne année, oh, bonne année.
Aujourd'hui c'est la fête, il y aura beaucoup mangé. À la merci, encore merci pour le mouton. Tout puissant merci, tu m'as donné beaucoup.
We have been listening to Lokwasa ya Mbongo and Sam Mangwana with that classic song, Bonane. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us this New Year's Day. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bonne année, bonne année. Si la joie dans les foyers, maintenant je m'en